I wore gloves in my life. Because back in those days, nobody wore gloves, right?
Right.
First time I wore gloves and had about four pairs of socks on. And been playing Baltimore. I've all played Canada, Connecticut. I played in Ohio. I played in Wisconsin. I played in a lot of cold places. But Baltimore, that game was the coldest game I've ever played in.
Wow.
It was really cold there. And it was open air stadium. And the wind was blowing. It was at night.
Mm.
So I'm telling you, it's
not a game out there. That's that
and,
real
and some
work.
People, they don't be as aggressive because they really don't want to be out there.
Right.
Then you got some people who just, you know,
happy
they don't
go
ready to go to war.
Right? Happy-go-lucky type.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to go to war.
I know and, that's right. You always want to go to war.
Yeah, I mean, when I play, I don't care what it is. You know, when I strap it on, I got to go to work.
I know that's right.
And it's mayhem, harassment. It's hitting people, hitting them with ill will in my heart, vengeance, hate.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, I always say if I can hurt a man, send him to the hospital, I'm looking out for his family because he'll spend more time at home with his wife. He won't have to worry about him running around and cheating.
Hey.
So I always try to send people home so they can spend more time with their family. Don't you think that's right?
Hey,
they should work with their family, right?
That's a great thing to do. That is a great thing to do.
You know, people say, well, you know, he got a wife and family, but I didn't tell him to get married. I didn't tell him to have kids.
Or to play this game.
Huh?
Or to play this game of football.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's man's sport.
Yeah, if you're nervous, join the church service. If you're scared, stay in bed.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Who we got coming on today?
We got one of the greatest football players ever out of DC.
Ever.
He's probably the greatest. Some people might say is Lonnie Pern, the great running back from McKinley Tech. I think he made all Met in basketball. He made all in high football. Big running back. I mean, well disciplined. Went to University of Illinois. Worked some of the Red Ranges. Galloping Ghost. Went on and got drafted by Denver, like maybe the fifth round on that show. First black to ever kick in the Super Bowl. Kick off. Because
he
was a hell of a kicker.
Wow.
He started the Super Bowl against the Dallas Cowboys for the Denver Broncos. And
nice.
He is real humble. You know, he'll never brag on himself. He never brag on himself, but he is a great football player. You know, as far as running backs are concerned, you take Fred Wagner, Ronnie Harris, Norm Young. It's a few of them, right?
Uh-huh.
And some people say this one, some people say that one. I think Lonnie Pern might be at the top.
Uh-huh.
And at the top is probably one of the greatest athletes ever to come out of D.C.
I know that's right.
And it's young people, if you haven't heard of it, you need to read your history books. You know, because a lot of young people don't read.
Uh-huh.
And he was a great, great football player.
And that's how it's supposed to be, man. You're supposed to be great at whatever it is that you're going to do. You got to be great at it. If you're not great at it, find something else to do. Who else we got with us tonight? Who else
we got with us? Ty Barnett.
Uh-huh.
Legendary boxer, D.C., young boy. He's young to me, but he's been boxing for a long time. When he was at Anacostia, about 15 years old, he was boxing. He has made a hell of a career for himself. He's fighting on February the 27th.
27th of February.
Yeah,
nice.
And we're going to talk to him about that. And I remember when I used to run the Youth Gang Task Force, and we used to go to Anacostia on Minnesota Avenue and Goodall Road and we're beefing. Some of his boys were in it, but he always stayed the course and just stick with the boxing.
Right.
Never got into a lot of, you know, not a lot of nonsense.
Right.
He's a humble guy, too. I mean, he is a real, real good boxer. Got a good knockout punch and that fast hand.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's what I like to hear, man. Hey, we got one of our favorite callers, fans. This guy is with us every Saturday listening in, talking to us. I got to welcome my man to the show, man. What's going on, Dave? What's happening, boss?
What's up, man? What's up, Dave?
Hey, what's up? What's up, Brooks?
How you doing?
I'm doing quite well, man. Doing quite well.
My
How you doing, sir? I didn't get a chance to listen last Saturday. I don't know. I must have had a bad connection in my phone. But
yeah.
I'm listening today. And I heard all about Lonnie Pern when I was coming up. And, he was a bruiser, you know. Remind me of Bouye. You speak for DC Big.
Yeah, you know what? Bouye was a bruiser. Lonnie was a bruiser, but he had a little more speed, and a little more shifty. But Bouye was something. I played with Bouye Davis. He played with me with the DC Bears. You talking about an animal. Great head. I mean, he's going to kill you. He like beast mode.
Wow.
Yeah, he like beast mode. But, David, you said something about, you knew Tyrone family, Tyrone Barnett.
Yeah, that's my cousin.
Okay.
That's what's up.
That's my uncle's grandson.
Oh, okay. I've been knowing him a long time. He's a good dude.
And I don't know him that well. We have seen each other from time to time, but we never really sit down and got together and never sit down and talk and everything. But, you know, I heard of him, and he's supposed to be he's a family member, so, hey.
Yeah, and he's a humble guy, man. He's a real humble guy. He's not, he don't brag like you and I do. You know, some people brag like us, we got a big ego.
Yeah, you like to tell that story.
Hey, you and I got a big ego. That's the way we feel.
Hey, I should say, go big or go home.
That's right.
Big or go home. That's right.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
So what's up with you, Dave? You doing all right?
All right? Hey, Brooks, why you never tell them people that I don't want to get you in top flight shape about 20-something years ago? About 20, 25 years ago? Maybe 30.
You talking about when I was playing football?
When we was down Kelly Miller in the recreation center, when we had a makeshift weight room.
Yeah, that weight room was small too, and nice and sweaty. It was hot in there. I toward the end of my career, I was lifted. But David kept encouraging me, because he came home call, he kept encouraging me to lift. You know, I was lifting, but he really stepped it up for me.
That's what's up, Eric.
What
do you have to do?
How you doing? I started a lot of guys in a high style lifting weights. They were coming from all across the city to come down to that little matchbox, a little makeshift gym we made inside Kelly Miller Recreation Center. And it took off, you know what I'm saying? And when I left high school, I was bench pressing about 400 pounds. You know, that was pretty good for somebody from D.C. because we didn't know anything about weight and training programs, other than, than the exercise that the coaches and stuff were giving us. So, hey, I thought that was a hell of an accomplishment,
They weren't pushing it like they were. I first started lifting in 78. Roger Scott, the first person got me started. And when we was in high school in the 60s, we were doing isometrics. We nobody really lifting weight. And in the pros, they were lifting a lot of weight. They doing a lot of isometrics and stuff like that. But the best thing that ever happened to me when I got the weight was I was playing corner. And I got big, too. I was like 205, 207. In the corner, and those weights really help, especially in the fourth quarter. They really help. Right?
That's good stuff.
Plus, you add that with a nasty attitude,
That's work right there.
And then that's what you got on football field.
Oh, yeah. Hey, we're going to take this quick break, and we're going to come back. Everything DMV Radio, Let's Talk Football with the Hangman, and got my man Dave with us, man. They be on it, man. They be on
good
it,
guy.
Man. Definitely a good
coming
guy.
Coming back with Lonnie Pern.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Talk to you.
Family. My mother's side of the family were are kind of legendary in Norfolk, Virginia for adult softball, fast pitch softball, known as the Skinner. I'm a Skinner. And so, you know, my mother was a athlete, and so was my father, and I guess it just, you know, it was natural. I came to D.C., and, you know, I mean, sports and athletics, you know, was a release. It was something to do, something I enjoyed doing, something that I could do well, you know, so. That's basically what motivated me to get involved.
Let me ask you, what when you were growing up, what was your favorite sport, though? Because you played all of them well, but what was your favorite sport?
Actually, my favorite sport was always basketball. You know, there's a lot of basketball being played in D.C. You know, the places like DeMatha had people like all Sid Catlett and the Catholic schools with Austin Carr and, you know, all these people who were kind of role models for it, Bob Whitmore and all those guys. And then there were great public high school basketball players. So they were all like stars. They were somebody to emulate and guys that you saw, you know, in the community doing well. So, of course, I wanted to play. I wanted to play basketball, but you know, I love baseball. Actually, between basketball, baseball, and football, football was third. Really, I like basketball and baseball better. Actually,
yeah, you know what? Somebody told me that. I know you and I talk. But you made all met in basketball too, right?
Honorable mention.
Okay.
Should have been team all met, if you ask me, man. I should have been first team all met that year, but I wasn't. Yeah.
Okay. So you know, when you graduated from McKinley and you went to Illinois, it was cold up there, wasn't it?
Well, now, you know, I grew up in Kenilworth. And I actually had problems trying to decide where to go to school because I was, you know, raised by a single mother in public housing. It was really rough there, and I was the oldest son, so I thought I had an obligation to stay near home, and you know, protect my mother and my family, and I could have gone any place in the country really, but I really was you know, couldn't make up my mind and couldn't really leave and, you know, enjoy school with the situation the way it was at home. And so, you know, come to find out, you know, a lot of guys in the community assured me that nothing would happen to my mother or my family while I was gone, that they would look after my family for me. A lot of the guys, in fact, a lot of the guys that was causing problems in the neighborhood, that, you know, so they would protect my family. So it was kind of easy, you know, that made it easier to leave and go away. I went to Illinois, leaving a place like Kenilworth, inner city. And if you don't know anything about Illinois, then Illinois had an airport on campus.
What?
Yeah, it was huge, man. I went from Kenilworth, leaving the projects, to landing in what looked like a cornfield to me. So you're talking about culture shock, man. There were 45,000 students and only 4,000 black students. No, let me correct that. Minority students. So that included, you know, any ethnic group. So, yeah, it was a complete culture shock, man. And so the only thing to do out there for the most part was study and watch the corn grow.
Wow.
Yeah, so you really have to focus, man.
So I can say, on the campus of the University of Illinois at an airport.
Oh, wow.
On the campus. You have to work the project at the airport. Yeah.
At the school.
It was the School of Aviation, and Ozark Airlines landed there. It left Dulles Airport and landed right on campus, man.
Wow.
Well, let me ask a question. When you first got there, how did they treat you as far as the football team? How were you treated? You know, did you have any problems? Because, you know, I talked to Cornelius Green. I know you was a little different. When he went to Ohio State, boy, he was on the show. He told us about the Klan. The Klan sending threatening letters from killing. They would have blown up his car. He went through so much.
Is that right? Well, you know, Cornelius has mentioned some of that to me.
Wow.
Well, you know, Cornelius was like a trailblazer, man. Was he the first black quarterback at Ohio State? I believe he was.
Yeah, he
was what?
The first one.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a little different. For him, and he was at Ohio State, a big time football factory.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was in Illinois, where we weren't really a football factory. Folks there liked football. I wanted to go to a place that wasn't a football factory. I wanted to go not where it would be easy to play, but someplace where, you know, it wasn't do or die, and, you know, you hear about all the guys that could have been if it had not been for eight or nine guys ahead of them. So, no, I chose Illinois for a reason. I could have gone to Ohio State, but we met with Hayes and Jeff, and, you know, I didn't like them, man. I really didn't, you know.
Yeah,
but,
and I remember Cornelius Green said when he got there, the first thing he had to do was go visit six children. Woody Hayes, that was mandatory for all new students to go and visit the six kids. See, that's some stuff that a lot of people don't know, right?
Yeah. Deeper than football.
You're right. So
how was your college experience?
Well, you know, like anything else, it was a learning experience above the academics. You know, you just learned a lot about other people, other cultures, yourself. And we basically had a good time. I met have a lot of friends now in Chicago, and my best friend is in St. Louis for the most part, and that's the whole. Beg your pardon. Willie Gottrell is still there. Matter of fact, he's he's from Cadoza. He's actually living in Chicago now. He works, or well, he's a retired police trainer. Beg your pardon?
I got him on Facebook. We talked sometimes. That's my main man. But did you start when you were up there right away? Did you start?
When I first got to Illinois?
Yeah.
I started my sophomore year. We had a good team. We had a coach named Bob Blackman. He was from Dartmouth, and he really wasn't a... You know, he didn't scare you, okay? you weren't afraid of him. You know, talk to you. He'd get you to, you know, play hard and things like that. And some of us respond to that type of culture. I don't know. I never responded to somebody in my faith yelling and screaming. You talk to me and I'll do what you need done. But I never was that kind that responded to the coach that coaches like a drill sergeant. That never got anything, never got results from me.
So look, you started every year, right? I remember one time you told me about you scored three or four touchdowns and it was so cold you were playing somewhere and the coach wanted to send you back in the game to break Greg Grange's record. And you said send somebody else in there.
Actually, what happened, it was the last game of the year, and I had four touchdowns. Now, taking my roommate for 3 years was a running back, too. His family was at Northwestern for that last game.
Okay.
The third quarter, I'd already scored four touchdowns. The coach wanted to put me in the game, back in the game, to break Greg Grange's record, and there is my roommate, who wants to play bad. His whole family there. He met the family the night before. He wants to go in bad, man, so they had an attitude at me because I wouldn't go back in the game. I let my roommate play. He played a quarter and a half, man, and I didn't care. You know, I mean, I would have liked to have had the record, but, shoot, man, that was my friend, man, and I knew how badly he wanted to play, how badly his family, you know, wanted to see him out there, man. So, plus it was cold.
But that was great that you looked out with your friend. A lot of people would have said, man, I want the record. But, you know, especially when you room with somebody, you got to look at it every day. And the family out there, I mean, that's the best way to do it. You know, most people, anybody with any kind of heart or care about their teammates, that's the best way to go right there. I really believe that. Right? Okay. Let me ask you, when you left, you got drafted by Denver, right? Denver Broncos.
How was the draft? How was the draft in 76? I mean, was you at the draft in place? Was you at home? Like, how did it happen?
Well, actually, now, if you don't remember that, you used to have 17 rounds then.
Yeah, I remember.
So anybody drafted, if you were drafted in the first 8 or 9 rounds, you were really wanted by the team. I thought all the time I was going to Dallas or Atlanta, because no one from Denver came by to recruit. Nobody worked. The only people worked me out was Dallas and Atlanta. And so when Denver drafted me, it was funny. I had to look on the map where in the heck Denver was, you know. And so. It was a year after Floyd Little retired. They had Otis Armstrong there, who I saw play in the Big Ten a couple of years before me.
Boy.
And he was good, man, and he kind of helped me out. We became good friends, still good friends today. Denver was a kind of eye-opening experience, man. I had a great time. It was a part of the country that I'd never been to for time, the Rocky Mountains. It was nothing to do in Denver but ski and watch the Broncos for the most part. So people were really crazy about the team. You know, the big city, small town atmosphere.
Red Miller was your coach, right? What do you think about Red?
Miller?
Yeah.
Well, actually, we went to the Super Bowl Red Miller's first year.
Yeah,
and,
oh, yeah, right.
You know, I learned a lot about preparation, game planning, and that type of thing. The previous year we had John Ralston, and he was kind of old school.
Yeah, I remember Ralston. Yeah, I remember that.
But when Red Miller came in, it was just a whole different level, man. I learned so much under Red in terms of just preparation and studying films and preparing yourself, which I basically never really did. You know, you get a taste of it in college, but it was just a whole another level. I saw it work as under Red Miller.
Awesome. Let me ask you this. Would you say that 78 with Denver or 77 was your best year with them? Because I believe in 78, you went for 5 touchdowns, 1 receiving, and then 4 rushing. And then 77, you went for 3 rushing touchdowns and 1 receiving touchdown.
Well, probably 78. You know, we had a system in Denver in which we alternated backs. And I think if you're looking at being selfish, if you're looking at just yourself, that might not have worked well for most people. And at times, it kind of irritated me as well, you know, because I was used to being the main. I was used to being the person that's getting the 25, 30 carries, you know, a game from the time I started playing. But once in Denver, we were rotating. It was, in fact, the backs carried the plays in. So it wasn't a whole lot of signals and waving those flags and faces and clowns and all that stuff that they do now. The players actually ran the plays onto the field. So in Denver, the backs did it. So, you know, those 4 touchdowns that I scored in 1 year should have been 8 or 12 had, you know, they were featuring one back or they had one starting back and just played the whole game. So,
right.
No,
you had an amazing kick return.
Beg your pardon?
Yeah, I'm sorry. You had an amazing kick return year in 78, too.
Yeah. I did a little bit of that. We had, I don't know if you heard of a guy named Rick Upchurch.
Yeah,
He was back there as well, but I think that year they wanted to concentrate more of having him for him as a receiver. So they put me back there to and see. Actually, I don't know. I have never seen anybody see that year. I kicked off for the Broncos and returned kicks. I don't ever know anybody doing that in the history of the league. I've never known of anybody to actually kick off and return the kickoffs for any team. And I've tried to research it, but I've never – you can't come up with it. I don't think anybody has ever done it.
I don't think anybody has done it. But
to the Football Hall of Fame and tell them I need to be in there just for that.
Yeah, you should be. You should definitely be. But let me ask you, weren't you the first black to kick off?
To kick off?
Yeah. The first black.
No, I don't think so, because Gene Upshaw was the emergency kicker for the Oakland Raiders. but he wasn't the starting kicker. I don't know if he ever even kicked, but he was listed as the emergency kicker. Somebody told me that Luke Grosser, not Luke Grosser, Marion Motley, he was the guy before Jim Brown. They said Marion Motley. I don't know for sure.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. When they asked you to kick off, what, they had a problem with the kicker and they decided that you kick off, or did they have a kick, or were you just the kicker as well as the running back?
Where at? Man, I kicked since high school, man.
Oh, yeah, I've been kicked to high school. I'm saying, when you got there, did y'all have a kicker?
Where? At Denver?
Yeah. Or you were the kicker? Yeah.
In Denver.
Were you the kicker?
In Denver with the Broncos?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I kicked off. Now, Jim Turner was a place kicker. Jim Turner kicked the field goals and extra points. But I kicked off and went down and made the tackle because a lot of times blocking teams aren't designed to block the kicker. Everybody has a person to block. When you kick off, when the kickoff return team, everybody has a person to block, but usually that kicker will drop out. Well, half the time, I would run down the field, and nobody would block me, and I'd, you know, be right there to, you know, make the back go another direction or even make the tackle.
Man, that's amazing. Did you attempt to kick any field goals?
Well, no, you know, not as a professional. I always practiced I was supposed to have been the long field goal kicker for the Broncos because, you know, when I played with Jim Turner, he was kind of up there in age because he was with the New York Jets and end of his career was around the beginning of mine. So, I was there with him for 3 years in Denver. But I kicked a 52-yarder in college against Penn State.
52-yarder against
Florida. Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Let me ask you this. How did it feel when you started in the Super Bowl against the Dallas Cowboys? That must have been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, playing in the Super Bowl, man, is you know, something you dream about, and, you know, almost everybody that plays football want to get there, man. I had family that came, that drove from this area to New Orleans. I had some family members there, man. It was a good time to be had the whole time. So it was something, an experience that I would never forget, man. I wish we would have won.
Let me ask you a question. You lost that game, and I remember that game like it was yesterday. Lost the game. How was the mood in the locker room when you lost? How was the mood?
Well, of course, folks was upset. We didn't win the game.
Yeah,
however, even a regular season game, it was such a festive event the whole week, the whole game, the halftime, the whole thing was such a festive kind of event. Losing that game felt bad, but just the Super Bowl kind of took some of the edge off of to be honest.
Right.
But for some reason, I didn't feel as bad losing that game. It might sound strange, as you may have you know, losing a regular season game. I didn't, personally. I can't speak for everybody else. But so much was going on, even the whole week. The whole week, you know, you have interviews, you know, guys on television, family, friends, parties, the whole thing. The whole thing that the game was kind of yeah, it was like the afterthought, you know, but not really, but, you know, so it wasn't really as bad. I didn't cry for days, man. I wasn't in a deep depression or anything like that, man. It was
blessed, really, to be in that position.
Yeah.
The Super Bowl to start. But let me ask you this. Now, I remember we used to talk. Yeah. You ran the ball against some of the great defenders. I remember one time you told me about Jack Taylor. That Jack Taylor, my man, George Axton. I might have George Axton on the show. But I remember you told me that you got Jack Taylor head up and you ran over it. He said, but the problem is when he's coming from angles, he's devastating. But you said when you met him head up, that was a thing. What is the most hardest you've been hit? I mean, names of the guys that really, they really hit you. You really felt it.
Yeah, well, actually, there were really two times. I was at, we were playing Pittsburgh, and I'm at the bottom of the pile, a short run. And look, I just ran the ball. I was going to touch them, but by the time Mean Joe Green was laying, I was at the bottom of the pile. Mean Joe Green had his forearm across my throat. Look, he was in, it was a pile. They were unpiling people, and I'm at the bottom of the pile. I don't even know if he could have gotten up. People were on top of him. I thought I was going to die before they took everybody off. So I was at the bottom. So by the time, the fish was cleared and everybody got up, you know, I could finally breathe again, man. But I thought it was. I'm down the goal line.
I try to tell people at the bottom of that pile, all kind of stuff happens. Cause I used to stick my finger in people's eyes. You stick a finger in the person's eye, you do it right, it'll swell up.
That's crazy.
So all kind of stuff happens. I know it's a lot of stuff that biting. It's a lot of stuff that happens. And Pittsburgh, when you said Pittsburgh, I know because Pittsburgh, you know, they crossed the line a little bit.
Oh, man. I think we got a caller in right now with a question for you. Let's see what we got right here. You're now live with the Hangman. Let's talk football. Oh, man, I hope you. Do you have a question for Lonnie?
Is Dave on again?
Yeah, that's Dave.
Hey, how you doing, Lonnie?
Fine. How are you?
Okay, I went to Eastern Illinois University, and you are absolutely correct about those airports, man. I went to Eastern Illinois in Charleston, Illinois, and all the airports are in a cornfield. And New York Airline used to fly all in that area, right? And you're absolutely right, man. And I went through the same issues that you went through. You know, so I can, you know, really, really, really understand what you were saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and it's important that when you come from an area like this and go there, you know what you're getting into. Especially if you know, you're going there for an extended time, and especially if you're going to school there, you need to know exactly, you know, just what's going to happen. I went there on a recruiting trip, man, and it was, you know, it was a whole kind of different atmosphere. In fact, we landed in Chicago and drove to Illinois. I didn't land there on a recruiting trip. I get there in the springtime and Sly and the Family Stone was playing on campus that evening, man. Everybody was out. The weather was warm. The click clackers, the two balls that used to kind of swing together and the click clackers were out. It was a good time to be had, man. So I came back thinking, I'm going to have a good time and things going to be fine. But,
We got one more question for you, Lonnie.
Okay.
You are now live with the Hangman. Thanks for holding. You are now live with Lonnie. You got a question for us? Hello? Okay. All right. Well, I guess that guy didn't have a question. Hey, Dave, thanks so much for your question.
Lonnie, let me say this. Man, I always respected you, good friend. Spoke at my dad's funeral, man. I always had so much respect for you. And I remember we were just talking on the phone about football. How crazy some of these coaches are. But I always had a lot of respect for you, man. I'm glad that you're a friend, and I'm so glad that you came on the show because it meant a lot. I had a lot of big time guests on there, and you're at the top of the list. So I appreciate having you on the show.
Thanks so much, Lonnie. We look forward to doing this again.
Well, me too, man. And thanks for having me, man. And I'm a listener from now on, man. I didn't know much about it, but I'm listening to everything DMV, the Hangman.
Thank you.
They got a lot of energy, man. I'm all right. Love you, man.
Love you too, man. Take care.
Okay.
All right.
Boy, Big Fox, everything DMV radio active, the artist voice. And man, we hear live in the DMV each and every day.
I brought it in at that time so we can do the call.
For the Maryland, for the VA.
You can't hear us now. We can't hear it. You see, that's the only way you're going to be able to hear it is if this is on. See, this is not on. It's down. It's off.
Got some great,
I know what you're saying, but I had turned on the mic so we could go into the call.
Where, pay attention, because we're going down. It's your boy, Ben Fox. Everybody go out to the audience.
Praying is characterized by a strong desire that you will go out of your way to satisfy, usually as a result of stress and or emotion. If you ever start to crave something unhealthy, identify the actual food characteristic that is at the core of your anger and opt for something healthy that shares that core. If you can't, try putting off eating it for 15 minutes. Often, you'll become engaged in another activity and you'll find that the craving is waning. The emotional success of overcoming the craving is often better than the temporary pleasure of arriving from succumbing to it.
You are now live with the Hangman. Thanks so much for calling in. We've been trying to catch your call. How you doing, sir? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Brooks.
Cotton Pickett. Hey, man.
What's up, man?
About the hockey. We're going to have you, Cotton.
Oh, man.
Cotton, I'm glad you called, man. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I was just calling to check in there, man. It was good hearing from Lonnie Pern. He's a good guy, man.
Yeah.
Always good to hear that history about D.C. football and the things they done. He was a great, good dude every time I saw him.
Yeah. He's a humble guy, man. He's similar to Freddie Wagner. He's humble like Freddie.
Nah, he ain't that humble, man. He's a whole different animal, though. Tell Fred Lonnie was better than him, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, man.
But, man, that's a great show you got going there.
Yeah, man, I know you was waiting for a while.
Yeah, that's no problem. That was a great show y'all doing. That's a good thing y'all doing over here, man. I enjoy just listening to everything that was going on,
Definitely. He's about to have Ty Monette on right now. We're about to actually
Thank you, man.
Get him on.
We're going to have you on the show about your hockey. Your son plays hockey. What are we going to talk about?
Oh, yeah. That's going to be lovely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. But, man, I'm going to keep on listening, man, and y'all bring on the next guest, man.
Okay.
That's what we do.
Appreciate it.
All Oh yeah, we got the job on that coming on next, man. It's gonna be good, man.
The boxer. We say let's talk football with the Hangman. We talk sports. We might have baseball players in there. Hockey players, uh-huh. But guess what?
Yes, yes. You're not live with the Hangman Brooks. How you doing, Ty?
All right, what's up, Brooks? Hold on.
Love you, man. I was telling a story about you back in the day when you were at a concert, you were boxing, and you know,
yeah.
A lot of times people got in a lot of problems and stuff, but you kind of stay away from that. You stay true
yeah.
to boxing, and I respect you, and you turned out to be a star, you know.
Yeah.
You got a big
yeah.
fight coming on. But what we want to do is just tell us about your journey, how you got started boxing, and what made you you know, go to that sport or whatever, because, you know, you're a tremendous athlete.
Yeah, well, I got started in junior high school when I was in Sousa. You remember you used to come up there
yeah,
all
yeah,
the time, man? Yeah, that's where I got started. My mentor up there, Steve, you know, he had us up there, and he asked us, we had a little group one day, and he's asking everybody what they wanted to do when they grew up. And I told him, man, I want to box, man. He said, you sure? I said, yeah. He took me to the gym, man. I've been doing it ever since.
That's unbelievable.
That's what's up.
Have you ever thought about quitting? I mean, when you were young.
Nah.
Started. Okay.
Nah,
okay,
Nah. You know, I made a decision to box over basketball, you know, because I was good at basketball. Team Assault, they would scout me, you know, they used to come up there and encourage them, they'd give me uniforms, buy me shoes, and, you know, I had to make that decision, man, I chose boxing.
Well, okay, tell us from junior high how you really got started, and tell me, just talk about your journey, you know.
Well, you know, it was always in me, you know, the box, but my father, you know, he wasn't around, so I had to, you know, find a way to actually get in the gym and boxing. You know, Steve, he helped me a lot by, you know, introducing me to guys like Ali Dunlop, may he rest in peace, and took me to the gym, you know, and I've been doing it ever since, man. You know, I chose boxing. Boxing ain't choose me, you know. That's what makes me stand out from a lot of these dudes, man, because some guys, you know, when you're young kids, you know, they box because their parents make them do it. Oh, I wanted to do it.
Yeah, a lot of them do it to stay out of trouble. No,
yeah.
Because you wanted to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I come from Southeast, you know. I was surrounded by trouble. You know, I had my ins and outs with, you know,
yeah.
trouble. You know, but I knew what I wanted to do, man, since a kid. I always knew what I wanted to do, regardless of what I went through outside of boxing, in the street, things like that. I knew what I wanted to do. So, here we are.
Okay, you start boxing amateur, and take us through that amateur and pro.
Yeah, I fought amateur, you know, young, you got to start in the amateur. Fought in the amateurs. I fought in the Golden Gloves, won the Golden Gloves like 3 times. The Virginia Olympics, I fought in the PAL, I fought in the USA, you know, fought in a lot of tournaments, turned pro at 22, 2005, and I've been doing it ever since, man. I've been pro since 2005, going on 11 years, come April.
Man, you still got your faculties, too, and you still got your looks, too. Let me ask. Let me ask you this. Tell me something about some of your biggest fights. I know you got one on February 27th, but tell me about some of your biggest fights that you've had.
Well, you know, this fight, February 27th, is pretty much a comeback fight for me, fighting that veteran and tune-up fight. But I done had, you know, big fights on big stages in Las Vegas, you know. It's more of a mental thing, you know, more mental than anything, man. You know, the dudes that beat me, you know, they didn't beat Ty Barnett 100% focused. You know, they beat me at a when they called me at a messed up time, you know, I wasn't focused like I was supposed to, man. You know, and lost to them guys, you know, can't nothing match me skill for skill. They can't walk a day in my shoes, but, you know, I got my head screwed back on tight, man, focused, and I'm ready to make a run for it, man.
Yeah. They have ups and downs like football players. You know, you have good days, bad days, and sometimes, you know, football, you lose your focus and stuff, and then you say, oh, okay, and you get right back. So I understand that.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. This fight you got coming up on the 27th, tell us about this fight coming up.
Huh?
Tell us about this fight coming up on the 27th of February. Tell us about that.
I fight a guy by the name of Daniel Arton, you know, a cagey veteran. He's been in there with everybody, man. His last fight, I think him and Sasha fought each other at Winston before Anthony Peterson, Robert Easter, a few other champions. You know, a lot of them didn't knock him out. But, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. February 27th, something they ain't do, man. I'm going to stop them, man, because it's a new day, man. I'm telling you, it's going to get ugly.
Stop. You say
it's going to
be ugly. You say you're
going to
stop it.
I'm going to stop it, man. That's one thing about me. I can punch, man. I know I got a gift. I got a gift, so, you know, I'm going to take full advantage of it, use my gift, man, to my advantage. I'm going to knock him out. He ain't never felt no power like this before.
I know, that's right. Hey, let me ask you a question, man. What's your guard style?
My guard style?
Yeah.
I'm orthodox. I leave with my left hand. I'm orthodox fighter.
Nice. What would you say your best professional career fight against who and why?
Well, all my fights, you know, they in the past. You know, I can't say none of them was my most important fight because, you know, regardless of the outcome, you know, we here today. We starting over. We about to, you know, get on to that championship level in a minute, man. So my best fight has yet to come, man.
I know that's right, man. I've seen some of your work, man. You really get it in. I've seen a number of your fights too, man. You got a really hard hit. How do you train? I mean, like, when you get ready to do your thing, like, what's the mindset you in? How many hours you putting in? Like, what does that look like for you?
Oh, man, I got tunnel vision right now. You know, I'm back at home, you know, with my team that I started off with. You know, with the ones who I did the most damage with. You know, we start training in the morning around 9:30, 10 o'clock. You know, don't leave the gym until probably like 1 o'clock. And, you know, training, it get real intense. You know, it get real intense, man. You know, I got world-class work at the gym with me, man, boxing off. You know, Anthony Lamont, you know, a lot of the young up-and-coming pros, a lot of top amateurs. You know, a lot of people come to the gym, you know, to get spawned. So I got all the work I need, man. And I'm just ready. I can fight tomorrow, but I'm ready to fight right now. If they let me.
I believe you always stay shape. Well, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What pound are you fighting?
You know, I'm a lightweight. I'm 135, but this fight contracted at I think 138 plus one, so like 139.
Nice.
What is the most you think you can carry on your back? And you get all, what's the most
my walk around, the highest I ever weighed is 151 pounds. That's the most I ever weighed.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't get over 151 pounds.
Okay.
And that's as of now. You know, I'm 33 now. Prior to that, I didn't get up to like 147. That's the highest I got.
Man, that's amazing, man. You got a name. Don't you have a company or some kind of business?
Yeah, Yeah, I have my own promotion company. You know, we promoted four fights in D.C. You know, my last three that I fought on, you know, was self-promoted. But I did a total of four shows on my own. You know, but I had to really, you know, step back from that for a second because, you know, while I'm fighting, I got to be focused on fighting. I can't focus on the business side and fight, man. There's too much weight on my shoulders.
Yeah, you're right. It's hard to be focused. Yeah. And then you got people around you, but you can't trust everybody. You know, you gotta have a small group around you. And, I'm telling you, hey, when I remember back in the day when you was at Anacostia, you talk about boxing, you know, I didn't laugh at you. Oh, man, go ahead. Hey, I always talk to you about it because I knew. I could see it. I could see it in you when you were in the box. I mean, everybody had problems and stuff. You said, man, I ain't thinking about that. I'm trying to box, man.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my that crew I used to hang with, they stayed in or something. I ain't never have to fight nobody. Them dudes ain't want to fight me, you know, but my little crew stayed in or something.
They want to come get you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love them boys. You know, one thing about it, you know, when I had them together, I always got their respect. You know, Minnesota and Georgia, they're going back and forth. I did have that respect for them guys. You know, I loved all them guys, you know. And and I used to talk to you, you know, a lot of times. You know, I get through a mediation with them, and you and I just talk about boxing and whatever. You kept saying you want to be a boxer. You want to be a boxer. And hey, you fulfilled it. And now you're on a journey back.
Yes. That's what I like to hear, man. Hey, where's the fight going to be? How can, you know, people come out and support you and support what you're doing?
The fight is going to be at the BC Convention Center. Tickets don't go on sale until January the 11th. And,
I need tickets, man. I'm coming.
Yeah, I'm going to post everything, you know, how you can go about getting the tickets as soon as I get all the information on the 11th. Go from there, man.
Well, who else is... boxing on that card?
Me. I'm headlining the card. We got a couple of guys on my gym, Antonio Magruder and DeMar Nicholson fighting on the card, and Michael Fox, and I think like three more other guys. I'm not too familiar with them, but them the only guys I'm familiar with from around here.
Nice.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and I see you got the support of the community, too. Is the shooter still part of your corner?
Yeah, you know, I got a good relationship with Rob over there, Shooter. You know, he used to make all my uniforms, and we still, we cool. We good, man, like family.
That's what's
Chris, Shooter's over in what's that, Clinton or something. That's my man over
Clinton.
There. Chris.
Chris,
my man.
You know, that's my man. Chris used to work down in the car.
Yeah, I know.
He called me.
I want to come. I'm definitely gonna come see you fight, man. Cause you know, you're one of my boys. I'm thinking about you all the time. I ain't told Bridget about you. I was saying, my man Ty Rowland. I said Ty Rowland out there. You ever go by the school in the costume?
I ain't been down there in a long time, man.
You need to go down and talk to some of them youngers. Maybe get them in the auditorium and talk to some of them youngers so they can get their head on straight. But, you know,
this generation here is gone, bro.
Yeah, I know. If you can get one or two of them, but they let me tell you something. I tell people all the time, back then when you were at Anacostia, those boys were a whole lot more dangerous than these guys. These guys are just really dangerous. You know, they don't have any rules and regulations. They ain't got no, you know, they're turning on each other in a heartbeat. You know, if one is getting more money than the other, they'll kill each other, you know, girls and stuff like that. At least back then, y'all had some kind of rules and regulations. You know, verse 7, you see the guys turning on each other. And I did a lot of mediations in that building. They used to call me a lot. But
yeah.
But I enjoyed it. I always got respect, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's great, though, Ty. It's great, man. I wish you all the luck in the world. And we're going to have you on the show. After you punish this Bama, after you punish this Bama, then we'll have you back on the show. Punish him.
Yeah, after I punish him, man, I'm trying to get right back in the ring, man, as soon as possible.
Okay.
As soon as possible.
Yeah, man, your workout tape, but Reek, Feathery, that looked real good, man. I see that work that you put in, man. It's real nice. You looking real sharp, man. So, I look forward to seeing your fight, man, and, you know, seeing what you do, what you're going to do. And just, you know, being there to promote and put all that information out there for you. So just run that by us one more again, man. It's the date, where it's going to be, and then how we can get tickets.
February 27th, live at the D.C. Convention Center. Tickets go on sale January the 11th at Keystone Boxing. And it'll be a few other guys that got tickets. I'll post the information on my Facebook soon as I get it at Ty Barnett. And, man, don't miss it, man. It's going to be a beautiful thing to see. I swear.
And guess what? It's going to be a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, beautiful thing, man.
What you say you're going to do? You're going to punish him.
Yeah, man. I focus like never before, man. I swear, man.
Hey, where's this guy from? Where's he from?
He's from, I think, Virginia somewhere. Somewhere on Maryland or Virginia.
He went to Bama. Oh, he went to Bama. Okay.
He's a journeyman, man. You know, somebody that's probably going to try to survive and sneak a few shots in, you know, if I let them. But, man, I ain't playing around with him. He jumped dead on.
Wait a minute. Hey, Ty, you try to get rid of him fast, or you
want to
play with him for a minute?
Yeah, I want to get rid of him fast. I don't want to play with him because, you know, I got a point to prove, man. The world ain't seen the best of Ty Barnett, so it's that time, man.
I know that's right.
Yeah. You know, a lot of my fights been, you know, down south, you know, on the West Coast, you know, different places, and they wasn't televised, and people really, you know, they ain't really get to see the best fight. You know, they seen me, you know, when I fought the guy on ESPN, and I lost that fight, but that wasn't the best me. You know what I'm saying? You know, you can check the resume. Like, my resume better than the majority of all these dudes in the city, except for, you know, Lamont. Man, Lamont done fought everybody put in their woods. These other dudes coming up, they fight all cab drivers, you know what I'm saying? Like, I done beat guys that I was supposed to lose to, you know, when I was climbing that ladder. You know, I was 16-0 with 12 knockouts, you know, that said a lot about punching, you know what I'm saying? And had some good names on my resume, you know what I'm saying? So,
you guys
I ain't got to prove nothing to nobody. I just got to show them, man, that I'm back, and I ain't playing.
But what about you? You said the cat, they fight cab drivers.
Yeah, they fighting. They on TV fighting cab drivers, man. That's what made me so mad. I said, oh, man, I got to get some of this money, man. They giving away money. These dudes ain't fighting nobody. You know what I'm saying? A lot of them been getting upset when they do get in there with somebody they can fight a little bit. So, you know, the door wide open, man. I'm talking about all of them. All these dudes you're seeing on TV just claiming they the best and they like that. And man, them motherfuckers are bums for real.
Yeah.
Hey, we got a guest, man. Got some questions for you, man. Hey, Dave, man. Hey, welcome back to the show, man. Talk to us. Ty, Dave, that is.
Yeah, what's up, cousin?
What's up?
What's happening, man? I only met you once or twice.
Yeah.
Uncle Kenny is my uncle, your grandfather.
Okay.
And you used to hang out with Leon.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, your cousin Leon, yeah. And I only met you a couple of times. If you don't know it, your grandfather had a punch out of the world, man.
Yeah, I heard.
You know,
I heard a lot
you know, my father was the boxer of the family. Yeah. And Uncle Kenny, the only thing he did was work. And one time they had an argument, and Uncle Kenny hit my father on the door and knocked him out of his shoes.
Yeah.
And this was the family I'm serious, man.
Yeah.
I mean, his grandfather is called the bread man.
Yeah.
You know, and my great grandfather had some hound dogs and he used to go hunting. So my grandfather used to make cornbread for the dogs. And he told my Uncle Kenny to go feed the dogs the cornbread. So he took the dogs hunting one day, and the dog ate the birds up. So he put the dogs back on the schedule in the backyard. Come find out the dog was hungry because Uncle Kenny wouldn't feed him the bread he was eating.
That's crazy.
You know,
man.
So.
Hey, that's Dave, man. Hey, one more time, folks, man. Give a shout out to your folks, man, and everybody who put in that work with you that you put in. Let us know where that fight going to be at and how to, what website or what Facebook page or where we find those tickets.
I'm giving a shout out to everybody, man, that's part of Ty Barnett. Team Barnett, my Headbanger family. The fight will be February 27th at the Convention Center in downtown D.C. Tickets going to sell on the 11th, man. Don't miss it. That's January 11th, don't miss it. Tickets be on sale.
You know what I always say? When you go in the ring, it's important to be nice, but it's more important not to be nice.
Oh, man, they about to see that. The real evil side of me, man. I swear, this is gonna get nasty in that ring, man. I'm turning on the kill switch at all times now, man. You know, I had a monitor on it at one point, and I turned it off and on. But man, now it ain't no turning back, man.
Yeah.
No limit. Yeah.
Nothing, man.
That's what's up, man. I mean, look forward to talking to you after the fight. We look forward to just being around and helping promote what you're doing and just being here as a group. Just everything, DMP Radio, Bob, Hangman Brooks, let's talk football, let's talk sports.
Yeah, and the box all day. Yeah, and we're going to announce about your fight every week up until the fight. So we go on every Saturday night, and we're going to talk about the fight.
Every Saturday night, 7:30 to 11:30.
Man,
yeah.
I love you, man. You
know,
the people knocking out
Cadbury. I love you too, Brooks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, boss, man.
Thanks for having on the show, right. Man. Love you, man. Good people, man. Right.
Okay.
That's my man, Ty. He's been knocking out cab drivers. Bob, you ever knocked out a cab driver?
Pre-game is a character.
I don't know if he was a cab driver or not, but he sure looked like one when I was done.
He didn't know which way he was going.
The emotional success of overcoming pain. It's not been better than the temporary pleasure that I've been supposed to.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking these fights were fighting weight.
If you want to increase
thinking these fights were fighting
weight, you want 4 to 6 reps of. If you want to work on muscle damage, take away from the 8 to 12 reps of. Make sure you are challenged from your first rep to your last, but don't lose your form.
That's the last fight.
Try to put processed foods and preservatives in your diet. As a general rule of thumb, if it's found in nature, eat it. If it's completely man-made, it's probably good for you. Base your meals on staples of lean meat, eggs, milk, fish, fruits, vegetables, nuts, and whole grains.
got sidetracked. He was old enough to see that sidetrack.
Mm-hmm. I know how it happened.
Ooh, look, swing a heart, swing a at the ball. Big man, whoop, big man, whoop, like a rugby. It's in the world. Where, big man, whoop, big man, whoop, play the game on the golf the field. Big man, whoop, big man, whoop, now let's talk. Look up at the poop in the whoop, with big man, whoop. In the heart of men for evermore. Main man, whoop, main man, whoop, nothing but you. In the world, where main man, whoop, play the game on and off the field. Main man, whoop, now let's talk. Look up at the people that whoop with main man, whoop.
Hey, hey, what's up? It's your boy Big Fox, everything DMV Radio Active, the hottest voice. Hey, man, we here live in the DMV each and every day, putting it down
one day
for
the, BN,
the DC,
one day
for the Maryland, for the VA.
The playoff,
send your music in at everythingdmv@gmail.com. Make sure you get on. If you're not on, we make sure we take care of our people around here, man. Got some great, great things coming up this season. Stay aware, pay attention, because it's going down. It's your boy, Vic Bacher. Get you ready to ask.
Creep characterized by a strong desire that you will go out of your way to satisfy, usually as a result of stress and or emotion. If you ever start to crave something unhealthy, identify the actual food characteristics that is at the core of your hunger and opt for something healthy that suits that quality. If you can't, try putting off eating it for 15 minutes. Often, you'll become engaged in another activity and you'll find the craving is waning. The emotional success of overcoming the craving is often better than the temporary pleasure derived from succumbing to it. When lifting, it's important to pick the right weight. If you want to increase strength and size, pick a weight you can do 4 to 6 reps of. If you want to work on muscle definition, pick a weight you can do 8 to 12 reps of. Make sure that you are challenged from your first rep to your last, but don't lose your form. Try to avoid processed foods and preservatives in your diet. As a general rule of thumb, if it's found in nature, eat it. If it's completely man-made, it's probably good for you. Base your meals on staples of lean meat, eggs, milk, fish, fruits, vegetables, nuts, and whole grains.
Give everybody a shout out for listening in. You can always call in. You can call in on 929-477-2975. What's going on, Brooke? What do you think about these playoffs?
Well, like I said, I don't make a lot of predictions, but I'm telling you, it's going to be a lot of sparks flying. It's going to be a lot of tempers, too. Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, they hate each other.
Uh-huh.
They hate each other. But one thing I like to say, I hear people talking on the radio, I hear sportscasters.
Right.
You know, some of these people, you know, they really talk stupid. And I'm going to tell you why they talk so stupid.
Tell me why, bro.
Teams within the division. When Atlanta beat Carolina, everybody jumped up in the air. Well, let me tell you something. Within the division, people beat each other all the time. No matter what the record is, they beat each other. They beat each other all the time, you know. So when Atlanta beat Carolina, everybody was running around saying, oh, Carolina will win. Carolina, the division means a lot. Just like with the NFC East. Cowboys beat the Redskins, you know. Redskins lose to the Giants. They beat the Eagles. It doesn't make a difference how good a team is or what they got going for themselves. The key to it is, if when you play when you're in the division, when you play in that your own division, you're going to lose some games. You're going to win some games. You're going to lose some people that have an inferior team. You know, you just it happens. Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. I remember when the Steelers were winning back in the 70s, they always had problems with Cincinnati.
Right.
They always had problems with Cincinnati. When the 49ers had a dynasty, they always had problems with the L.A. Rams. I remember the Saints, when Atlanta had great teams, and the Saints didn't have a good team, Saints always gave them a fit.
Right.
The New York Giants, when they were rolling, Super Bowl years,
uh-huh.
Philadelphia always gave them a fit. The Redskins gave them a fit. The Cowboys, I remember when the Cowboys went to the Super Bowl and they played against the Redskins and lost.
Woo!
I remember one time when they only won one game.
Wow.
The Cowboys, when Emmitt Smith first came, they only won one game one year and they beat the Redskins. So, you know, that thing about, oh, man, I can't believe this upset. Within the division, people beat each other all the time. And I don't bet on football, but if I was a betting man, I would never bet within the division. Because throw the record out the window. Throw what kind of good players you got. Throw it out the window because guess what? People within the division, they're going to beat each other. First of all, they draft for the division. That's number one. And they know each other like a book. Nobody's scared of anybody in the division. So you look at New England Patriots.
Uh-huh.
New England Patriots, they're rolling. Who
right.
they lose to a lot? They lost to Miami.
Right. Out of all teams.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't name one team that is a great team and nobody in the division beats them. Look, Green Bay had always dominated the division, but guess
right.
what? They always had problems with Chicago and Minnesota.
Always.
This year, Minnesota took the division.
Took care of them.
Yeah. So you really people? Oh man, I can't believe Atlanta beat Carolina Panthers. Be for real, they're in the same division. I don't understand that they're in the same division. Why are people so shocked? These people supposed to be authority on football. They're supposed to be experts on football.
Right.
They don't have sense enough
to know.
You play within your division. I don't care what your record is. You're going to lose some games.
You're going to. It's
yeah.
going to happen. They
yeah.
study you the most. They play you the most. Like, of course.
Yeah.
You're not going to win every one. And if you look at those rivalries, they always go back and forth.
Back and forth. Back and forth. Back and forth. Now, when you go outside a rival like the Redskins to play in Green Bay, now, like I said, I don't bet on football games and I don't make predictions. That's for the real smart people. I know who's going to win. I know. If you knew who was going to win, put your house up.
The analysts,
you know who's going to win. put your car, put your family out.
Right, right.
You know, sell your kids, whatever, if you know so much about who's going to win the game. Woo. I have no idea who's going to win. All I can do is look at the matchups. But the Redskins have been bad for so long. I said it, and everybody hated me, and I said it. Kirk Cousins is a better quarterback than
Hey.
I said it 3 years ago.
I can see it.
Then I hear people talking about, oh, the black man, they didn't give him a chance, and he's this and that. I don't want to hear none of that stuff. You go in the pros, nobody's going to babysit you. He's been in there 4 years. He's been hurt. So what? You can't make the club in the tub. So if you're hurt, and guess what? If somebody comes along and takes the job, they take it. He don't read defense as well.
That's
you know,
the way it goes.
He don't read defense as well. He's not a team leader. He blames everybody but himself when he loses. He's not a good NFL quarterback. College quarterback, yes. He come out of a spread offense. Mariota, he came out of that Oregon, that spread offense.
Uh-huh.
And guess what? He was killing it first. And look what happened. End of the year, they were killing him. Look at the boy from the Browns. With the Texans. That running around, throwing it up. I'm going to run with my legs. I'm going to make plays with my first down and all that. That kind of nonsense is a dog and pony show. You can do it for a while, but to stay in the league 15 years, you got to be able to win that thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Tom Brady,
it up on them.
Peyton Manning, these
right.
people can't run to the bathroom.
Huh?
They cannot run to the bathroom.
No.
But the key to any quarterback is get rid of the ball, get rid of it fast, and get it to the right person.
That's it.
Learn how to buy time in the pocket. You know, quarterback is an instinct game.
Right.
You know, a lot of people don't have that instinct, right? The average fan believes this, Rob. When the quarterback is sacked, that's the offensive line's fault. But what most fans don't realize is the quarterback calls the line protection.
Right.
He calls the line protection. So if the quarterback calls the wrong line protection, what happens? He gets sacked. But who do people believe? Who do they blame? They blame the offensive line, right?
Right.
Okay. You got 3 seconds to throw the ball. You got 2.5 or 3 seconds, right?
Right.
So when you stand back there 4 seconds, you get sacked. Oh, he don't have any blocks. He don't have any blocks. Then here's another ignorant statement.
Yeah.
Here's another ignorant statement. Kirk Cousins play, oh, they blocking for him.
Yes.
They don't like RG.
He calling the right play.
That is the dumbest thing. He can rid of the ball because he can read defense.
Right.
Is RG3 dumb? Oh, by no means he's dumb. He
right.
comes out of a spread offensive system.
Right.
I tell people all the time, if you got a son that's a quarterback and he's 6'3 or whatever and he can throw and he can run, send him to a college where they run a pro offense.
Right.
Pro offense because it's pro ready. So when he comes out of college, he's stepping to pros, they can tweak his game a little bit and they teach him to play.
Yeah,
you know, learn to play, right?
Yeah.
But when you come out of a spread offense, you never had a playbook in your
right.
life. Then you come to the pros and they give you 2,000 offensive plays.
Right. And you got to know.
Okay. You got to have your footwork. You got to have this and that. They're not going to teach you how to be a quarterback. That's another thing.
Right.
They need to teach him how
you
to be a quarterback.
You already hired for the job.
They don't teach people how to be quarterback in the pros. You got to come ready. They teach you a system,
you're
and they teach
way.
You little nuances of the
right.
position.
Would you recommend that all colleges that are on D1 level do have a position the players to be able to play?
No, because college is like this.
Uh-huh.
College is not getting kids ready for the pros.
Okay.
College coaches, they want to win.
Right.
They're not thinking about, I'm going to get him ready for the pros.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to get him ready for the pros. They don't care about that. They care about winning in college.
Bring
That's what the coaches are after.
To the school.
So they're not going to run an offense to try to get somebody ready for the pros, and they lose their job.
Right.
They got a lot of colleges that run pro offenses.
Right.
And
if I had
a son, you're not going to Baylor,
right.
Texas. When the last time Baylor produced a quarterback, Texas?
Right.
Vince Young came out of there. He lasted just a minute.
Right.
See?
I don't even remember who that is. No, I'm just joking.
Vince Young.
But that's how quick he was.
Yeah, you forget about it because they don't realize that you've got to send your son if you think that he might have pro potential.
Right.
I'm going to send him somewhere where the college runs a pro offense. Now, RG3, the boy from the Browns,
uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Those quarterbacks, guess what? They come out of a system where they're running around, and he's running, he's making plays with his legs, he's running around. I don't blame him.
Right.
I blame his stupid parents
right.
for sending them to a place. You know, why would you send RG3 to Baylor? He's from Texas, so we send him to Baylor. Oh, we want a quarterback because he can run and he can run and he's electrifying and black man run. Black
right,
man
right.
run. They love
right.
that. But guess right. what? When you're teaching him how to be a pro, teaching him the pro game, they're not doing it. And then when he comes to Washington, here's what Washington fans say. Oh, he can run.
Yep.
He can run.
Yep.
Look at the quarterback.
Oh, look at the runner. Look at him doing his thing.
Look at the quarterbacks who winning the Super Bowl. Tom Brady won. Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning. Russell Wilson is a quarterback that can move, but he only runs when he has to. He's really a pocket quarterback. He threw for 300-some yards in the last 4 or 5 games. So what does that tell you? That he is a pocket quarterback. He is not a run-first quarterback. When you see a lot of the guys that quarterback, the first man is not open. The first thing they try to do, the next thing they try to do is start running. You want to run. And running in the NFL will get you killed because linebackers, people don't realize how fast the game is. Linebackers in the NFL will track you down and they will destroy you, right? And a lot of people just don't understand. Everybody is so, I want a quarterback that can run.
Right.
I want a quarterback that can pass.
Yeah.
I want a quarterback that can stay in the pocket and get rid of the ball. We have one black quarterback in the Hall of Fame. That's Warren Moon.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Look at the quarterback. Think about this. Yeah, Jameis Winston.
Uh-huh.
He's with Minnesota.
Yeah.
He came out of Louisville. Pro offense. Look at James. I'm talking Bridgewater.
Bridgewater
went
to
Louisville. James Winston with the Florida State pro offense.
Yeah.
Right. You look at Cam Newton, Auburn.
Yeah.
You see. Then you look at Johnny Manziel. Then you look at RG3. All the running guys are having problems.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Russell Wilson is a unique situation with him because he is a pocket quarterback. He runs when he has to. He runs when he just don't take off running.
Right.
You don't ever see him getting hurt. He knows when to run, when not to run. So
he's not just out there wild turkey.
I don't like RG3. RG3 is not suited for the pros because look at the system he come out of. Now, Jerry Jones is talking about bringing him to the Dallas Cowboys. That's why the Cowboys haven't won anything.
Yeah.
He may keep the general manager for the Dallas Cowboys is Jerry Jones. He got a fool for a general manager himself.
Not mine.
Why would you bring a man down there?
That's already banged up.
He has 2 reconstructed knee surgeries, so that running stuff is out.
50-year-old knee.
He don't read defense as well. And then you're going to use him as a backup, and everybody say, yeah, you wait to RG3 get to Dallas. Well, first of all, Tony Romo is quarterback then.
Right.
And if Tony Romo don't get hurt, that whole division would have been a whole lot different. Anybody would have a brain would know that. But
Pittsburgh is on Cincinnati, the 21-yard line right now, 3rd and 2.
Who's up?
0-0, second quarter.
Who's up, Cincinnati?
No, it's 0-0.
0-0.
Yeah, but Pittsburgh is on Cincinnati's 21 right now,
yeah.
3rd and 2,
yeah.
within Roethlisberger.
One thing about Roethlisberger, he's a He's a great quarterback. But he's playing against Cincinnati. They know each other like a book. Cincinnati has a great defense. If Dalton is not hurt, it'd probably be a good game. Now, the guy, A.J. McCarron, is from Alabama.
Yeah, McCarron, he already got one interception.
Yeah, he
6-for-11, 55 yards, 6-for-11.
Yeah.
Second quarter, two minutes left.
You know what? That's going to be a rough game. Now, the only thing Cincinnati got going for them is they got one great defense. And they're going to have to play good defense against Roethlisberger with that arsenal he got. Because he got a lot of weapons, right?
Yeah.
But if anybody can do it, Cincinnati can. The problem is, can Cincinnati keep up with the scoring when it turns in, you know, turn into a slugfest?
Right. And now it's 3-0 Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. With the field goal, it's good.
We don't know how that's going to turn out. But I know one thing about Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. They hate each other's gut, and it's going to be physical.
Yeah.
And it's going to be some fights along the way.
It's going to be a game out there.
It's going to get ugly. And that's the way Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, that's how they go at it. You know, you look at some of the rivalries, they're right on the Redskins and the Cowboys. Then let me tell you something. You better look at the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers. Hey, they go back to the 40s. You know, you got the people. One rivalry that people don't realize is Kansas City Chiefs and Oakland Raiders. The reason why people don't talk about it because they've been losing a lot. But those two teams had a rivalry going.
And
let me say what a rivalry is.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes you beat me, sometimes I beat you, sometimes you beat me. A rivalry is not when I'm beating you all the time. And I'm in your business, I'm beating you all the time. That's not a rivalry.
I heard.
Yeah. In Dallas, guess who their rivalry is?
Who's Dallas rivalry?
The Philadelphia Eagles. It's not the Redskins. And the reason why, over the years, it's been Philly and the Cowboys fighting for the top spot. That was their rivalry. You know, the Redskins have been down for a long time. So the Redskins keep looking at the Cowboys as the big rivalry. But the Cowboys look at Philadelphia as the big rivalry, right? You talking about a hate rivalry? But see, people in Washington, they in Washington, so they don't see Philly and Dallas. But Philly and Dallas, I mean, some hate. And another thing is the Oakland Raiders and the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Uh-huh.
That used to be a hate. But it depends on if you're winning, right? If the Cowboys, when the Cowboys and the Redskins were both winning,
that
was a rivalry.
Yeah,
that was a rivalry.
So what do you think about tomorrow? Green Bay, Washington, Minnesota.
Well, I don't make predictions, but, you know, I think that Seattle has a real good chance, but X factor is they got to go to Minnesota. It's going to be real cold.
Right.
How they handle the cold, you never know.
It's they got a dome, I think, right?
No, they don't play in a dome anymore.
Oh.
The outdoors. They took it back like in the 60s. In the 60s, Bud Grant was a coach of the Minnesota Vikings. They didn't have heaters on the sideline. The other team had heaters. He didn't believe in heaters. He said, you're thinking about the heat, you can't concentrate on the game.
Right.
He did not have heaters on his sideline up in Minnesota. It was Bloomington, Minnesota. And they did not have heaters on the sideline, right? The Redskins and Green Bay Packers should be a good game. Kirk Cousins, I said what I had to say, the man has turned into a hell of a quarterback. The problem is that people in D.C. don't respect Aaron Rodgers.
Right. Hey, one of the greatest, I think. That's how I feel about him. Aaron Rodgers is nice, man. His record.
Well, here's what happened. They say Aaron Rodgers is not the same this year. Okay, well, let's look at it this way. That's the media talking and media talking and media talking. Okay, they're 10-6. They usually have a better record. They're 10-6. That's number one.
Uh-huh.
Number two, Aaron Rodgers threw 30 touchdowns this year.
Wow.
Right? He's been sacked a lot. But what people don't realize, the year that he won the Super Bowl, he was sacked more than any quarterback in the league. People don't know that.
Right. Exactly.
He was sacked more than any quarterback in the league. when Aaron Rodgers won the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
Because you get sacked all the time.
Don't mean
you're if
not
you're
doing
a soldier, you can get up and put that dagger
in
your heart.
Hey,
so,
keep that thing
going. So I think that people in Washington are underestimating Aaron Rodgers. You got an elite quarterback at any time he can beat you, as well as Kirk Cousins.
Right.
And Kirk Cousins has turned into a fine quarterback. Is he great? Well, that's 1 year. You know,
right.
you play 4 or 5 years, then you can start talking about elite. A lot of quarterbacks had 1 good year. I know a quarterback had 1 good year, and then he didn't have any more. He played with Washington.
I mean, so far, though, Cousins has outgrown Rodgers with 4,000 yards for his 30 years.
But see, you keep looking at he outgrown it. But guess what? It doesn't matter about how many yards this quarterback got and that quarterback. It really don't matter. It don't matter. It matters that game. It doesn't matter. You look at stats. Stats are for dummies. You look at stats and say, this quarterback had a better year than this quarterback. Does that mean in the playoffs that he automatically win? No, because circumstances.
Right.
In games, it's a lot of circumstances. People fumbling the ball. Is your running game working? Are your defensive backs getting beat? Are your linebackers, are they filling the gaps? Are they coming out the coming off the edge? You, for instance, the boy Matthews, they got to worry about where he is. He can give Cousins a fit. They move him around, and he's a pass rushing fool.
Right.
So you got to look at the total picture. You can't say, well, this guy's got a better record than this guy. Well, you look at it this way. He threw more yards than Aaron Rodgers, right?
Yeah.
But look at this. Who won the most games?
Yeah, you're right.
So all that stuff don't mean anything.
All right, we want to give a shout out, man. Thanks for listening in. Let's talk football. Hangman Brooks.
Get a shout out. I got my 2 daughters, my granddaughter, AJ and Isaiah, and my best friend. So long. See you around like a donut.
That's what it do. It's your boy Big Bach. Everything DMV Radio. We'll catch you next time. Hey, man. Hey, Dave, thanks again, brother, for listening in. Man.
Okay, buddy.
Got you, buddy.
Dave. All right, Brooks, I'll see you around. Yeah,
and I'll
fill that donut up for you. Yeah.